Welcome to the Being Curious Show. I'm Brian Mariani, founder of No Shift Own.
And I'm Kelly Wagner, publisher of Edge Magazine. Our show is about curiously connecting teachers and seekers on a wide range of topics in a safe space. Few topics will be off limits, and we have some amazing guests to share with you.
Our intention is that our conversations will spark your own curiosity to create a life that lights you up and inspires you to be kind, thoughtful, open-minded to yourself and others.
We are on AM 950, Sundays at 2 p.m. and all podcast platforms. So, Brian, what are you curious about today?
Hey, guys, it's Kelly, and I can't keep the mic going in a proper way today, so this is just kind of giving us a little bit what's going on in the world. Hello, we're here. Hey, okay, Brian's tripping the wild fantastic, because that's what Brian does. And we are wrapping up 2022, and this beautiful serendipity moment just unfolded, and I wasn't going to share it on air, but I'm going to because I'm just going to. So today we have Carrie Mangus, who is a friend of the show, friend of the Edge, and she's beautifully here. And then we have Laura Headland. Did I say that right?
Yep.
Okay, sweet. She is with Food Freedom Radio here at AM 950. Gotta love it. Hey, everybody on Facebook Live. So I just came in and shot a show with Laura, and afterwards, I mean, we're talking to this beautiful, what was her name again?
Claudia. Claudia, she's from Ukraine.
Ukraine.
And she's a consultant, but she also worked with the UN on development program on inner qualities. So states of being, thinking, and feeling, and belonging. But she's from Ukraine, so it was a very powerful conversation.
And we had our pre-interview and what we were going to talk about, and then she mentioned that she was a Ukraine refugee living in Sweden, and then I start channeling her grandfather. I mean, so we're like, right? It was one of those shows. So then we had so much content afterwards, we just started riffing. We were like, hey, Patrick, how are you doing today?
Oh, good. How are you?
Okay, perfect. We got Patrick, you know, DJ Patrick, like, keeping us going. And we're like, hey, we're going to riff. So we riffed for a little bit, and we're in studio. And then Laura and I started to talk, and I'm like, I got to get back for a call. I have this awesome person that I'm talking to at this time, and I've got to. So we're wrapping up our conversation, and in walks Carrie Mangus into the studio, and she's like, hello, I have an appointment with Kelly. And I was like, hello, friend. I thought we were going to do X, Y, and Z, but no, we get to do this today. And
I'm so glad.
So excited.
I'm so glad it worked out. It was perfect.
Talk about serendipity of just beautiful things happening.
A little magic.
Patrick had a little bit of time. Laura wanted to pop in. So we are doing this. Like, we're practicing what we preach.
That's
we're
right.
We're walking the walk and talking the talk.
Yep.
And, right?
I mean, you so like, walk into the open door.
Oh, my gosh. So, CarrieMangus.com is her website. She is, gosh, I mean, she is a woman. She is a soul. She is a mother. She's a dog mom, too, with the cutest, like, new puppies. Like, oh, my gosh, there's a story with that, too. She's an author. She's really here to create sacred space for people. And I'm honored that our paths crossed.
Our paws too.
Our paws too. Like, yeah, you never know. And you know, we've had this show idea. It's like she was back a couple of months ago. Actually, you were one of our first guests.
I think so. I think it was back in the spring.
Yeah, it was in the spring. Doesn't she have a radio voice, you guys? Like Laura? I mean, come on, like, right? So I'm going to ask her what she's curious about because I know that. But I want to let everyone know that I'm honored when I have people like Carrie and Laura in our world. And we're going to talk about some heavy stuff today, but doing it in a really powerful and light way and like moving through it. And before we start talking about reinvention and success and crisis, like, wow, reinvention, success, and crisis at the end of 2022. I mean, does it get any more powerful than that? I want to actually ask both of you and everybody on Facebook Live, sorry about the crazy configuration with our videos today. What are you guys curious about as we get into this new year? And I'm in this little corner over here, and I feel like I have the mic like crazy, whack, funky. But I want to know your curiosities, because next year, there's so much going on. And we can be all hippy-dippy and happy and unicorns and everything's going to be great. But I really feel that some stuff has to really happen so we can burst out and we can come into our amazingness. So, Carrie, talk to me about, like, where – it's not even just curiosity. Like, where are you at right now?
I'm just really – well, on a more
Hi.
Personal level, I would really – I'm really curious about watching my puppies. So that's on a more personal level because it's so much fun to watch their little personalities start to form. And
they were littermates, right?
Yes. Yeah. And we're just having so much fun with that. On a professional level, I'm really excited to see where this next book is taking me because the process of writing this second book – so far is so radically different than my first book and requires such different disciplines from me that it's been very exciting and very humbling. It's, you know, I don't think you get to this point where you're like, I've written a book. I know how to write a book. No, I knew how to write that book, but this one's a whole different thing. And then I don't know, I think on a collective level, I'm just curious if we really are ready to break through on some things on a collective level, if we're really ready
Tell
to
me
face
more about
the
that.
Truth. Well, there's a lot of cracks, right? There's a lot of cracks showing in our world and a lot of things that are starting to fall apart and a lot of things that are showing their wear, systems and paradigms that are no longer, that maybe never were, able to hold us, able to hold our humanity, able to hold, you know, all of who we are. And these systems tend to only favor a few, and we know this. And yet, what do? We tend to continue to try to work within the systems. So few of us are really ready to take on the systems themselves.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had a conversation with my father just this week over Christmas, and we were talking about the student loan crisis, and he said, you know, among other things, you know, people need to be more, you know, good with their money. They need to be able to budget. They shouldn't be able to take out these loans. And he was just going on about the people in the system. And I just kept coming to him about, yes, but what about the system? When are we going to start looking up and stop spreading blame out? And so that's my curiosity, I think, for the year 2022 is I want to see if we're ready to do some of that. I think we are. I got goosebumps just now when I said that. I think that there are some things that are broken enough and showing their, you know, their lead interiors from their gold exteriors, right? And we're seeing it. And people are coming together in a way that they haven't in a long time. And that's how you collect power. That's how you amass power, is by coming together and saying the system is wrong, it's broken, and we need to reinvent it.
Yeah. Well, and the few that have the power, they're going to do everything they possibly can to keep that.
That's right.
Right?
The status quo is very powerful.
Yeah.
And so my whole next book is about what does it take to get the status quo to move? How do you get to that tipping point? You know, and it takes people, and it takes energy, and it takes time. But I just feel like we're at this crux. I really do, Kelly. I feel like society is ready to tip because we can't keep band-aiding. We
Perfect.
Can't keep, you know, putting up more walls to hold a system that was never gonna last.
Laura, how do you add to that?
Well, so I'm going to take a side. I mean, the food system is a perfect example of what you just said, right? Obviously, we all need to eat right now, and there's so many issues going on in the global food system. I mean, the way that we do food as a system, not as an individual, but as a system, depletes the soil, kills the monarchs, and hurts the pollinators, and doesn't honor our health. There is a growing knowing that human health is connected to vital living soils, you know? And so how we move into a living world from almost this zombie economics. And part of it, I think, is actually doing that, separating the system from the individuals. And so I'm curious about you know, I feel like with all this universal stuff, there's part of me that I want to joke, too, because it's like the dog, when he's curious, he sort of tilts his head in this really enduring way,
yeah.
You know, in a sweet way. He just kind of tilts. And it's like, okay, how do we take this world and really honor the entire complexity and the personalization in a way that can function in real life, that we're actually, you know, feeding each other and paying our mortgages and being able to enrich ourselves with school and find a different functional economics that honors our ancestors and our descendants.
So here's something that's interesting that we talked about in our last show, and I would love Carrie to weigh in a little bit of it. Laura mentioned about trust.
Yeah.
Dot, 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 right?
Yeah.
Like fill in the blanks on that. And if we don't have, if we've been full of Band-Aids.
Yeah.
And there's been a lot of artificial trust, maybe, out there in the world.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be, and then we have all this fear. But trust, like, what do you...
As in placing it in the wrong people?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that we were all conditioned to believe that authority figures had our best interest at heart.
Yeah.
That is one of the pieces of the fabric that's coming apart. We're starting to recognize that authority figures, we're starting to see that billionaires are not geniuses, they're not magical people, and they're not necessarily going to put our best interest first. Right. I mean, I don't think you get to be a billionaire without being selfish, personally. So,
okay.
You know, I think that we do have this belief that maybe technology can save us or a system can save us or, you know, Mueller, that was his name, right? Robert Mueller, could save us in the political thing. I mean, there's always this other person that can save us. We've always had a savior complex. That's why we like superhero movies. We're always waiting for someone else to come in and save us. So when you're talking about trust, maybe what we need to do is take that trust and internalize it and trust ourselves again and our own knowledge and our own wisdom about what to put in our bodies, about how to operate. You know, there's a quote that I was pulling out of the ashes the other day, and it was by Jiddu Krishnamurti. He's one of my favorites. You know him. And it's something like, and it's not, it's paraphrased here, but, you know, it's not a measure of sanity to be able to work in an insane world.
Oh, gosh.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Just because you can function in a system, that doesn't all of a sudden make it okay. The system is corrupt for the most part. And yeah, so...
And what's common is that people blame themselves for the corruption. And that's what's so sad. It's like, I can't eat healthy. I'm a bad person. Well, no, it's not your fault. Look at what's available at the stores. You know, but to actually have that trust and to return to that trust. And you know, I think we're almost been conditioned to not trust ourselves.
We absolutely have. And we've been conditioned also to blame people, other people. And like I always say, we don't look up. We don't blame the people above us that are creating the systems and upholding the systems and the status quo. We blame other people for, yes, not being able to adapt to it. What do you mean you can't get good, healthy food? I can get it around the corner. Well, they live in a food desert. It's not the same. It's not, these aren't equal situations.
So back to the conversation with your dad at Christmas regarding, like, how did that end? Because like, he was like, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and you're like, yeah, but whoop.
My dad and I are polar opposites. And so when we come together in a conversation like this, you can almost feel the room hush, right? And everyone just kind of, okay, how is this going to go? And we both just take a couple of steps in and a couple of steps in. And then I told him, I said, look, we've got to look at the systems. The student loan system is a problem. The schools are making lots and lots of money. And yeah, the kids are going broke. And, you know, and they don't have another option because they absolutely need these 4-year degrees these days in a way that they didn't maybe before. But I would say that once I started talking about the system, it kind of ends the argument.
Right. You guys kind of just came in the middle and went,
It does, because if you're not pointing fingers at other people, no, it's you guys. Well, if they would. And once someone says, you know, I think we're all in the same boat and I think it's sinking, it tends to sober the conversation fairly quickly. So I would say about that time we paid our tab and we went home.
I think there's a lot of really simple kindness and common sense things we could believe in. Our birthright is a trust economy. And that seems like so shocking when you think about it, but that's our birthright.
You said that on the show and that you saw my face. I just went, what?
I think it's our birthright. And I know when I first thought that, I'm like, oh, that can't be right. But it's like, well, I expect it from my dog, right? I expect the dog to have a trust economy. Why can't I have a trust economy too? And we look at all of our systems and how dysfunctional they are. And then we almost are like conditioned that we have to have one little solution, whereas everything's so complex. And I think that's part of the consciousness is that we want to reduce things and, you know, make them simpler so that we can, you know, ban them back and forth and to be comfortable and humility, right?
Yeah, and you can't fix a broken system with the same tools you used to build it.
No.
So, and that's what most of the time we do, or we recycle old ideas, or, you know, think about the nostalgia, right, to want to go back to another time. That's, yeah.
Well, just going back to the way it was. Oh, gosh, yes. You guys. Okay. That was segment one. Like, hello. I feel like we just, like, queued up the music just a few moments ago. Being Curious, Kelly and Brian, AM 950. We'll be back in a moment. I always love that little end. I just want to do this little girl going, hello. Hey, guys, it's Kelly. Being Curious with Kelly and Brian, AM 950, here with Carrie Mangus, here with Laura, Food Freedom Radio co-host. Or you're a host. You're not just a co-host. You're like the big deal. Okay, here we go.
10 years. Been doing it for 10 years.
Woohoo! Talking about awesomeness. Okay, so at the beginning of segment two, now we're going to get into some, like, yummy. So we talked about our curiosities and started to talk about student loans and all these beautiful conversations. And, oh, my gosh, even the dynamics of talking with Dad. I love that you – I love the way you – like, for those that were seeing it on the video but not listening to this on the podcast, she just kind of showed how that it was like this beautiful dance between her and her dad and this. And if you didn't have the kindness and the love and the respect, you wouldn't have been able to do that because it would have been more of just, like, let's go. So I want – to ask you about crisis, because I think we're kind of coming off of a couple of years of fear, and it's like our whole world got put into a blender or a snow globe, and without even knowing, it was like you're watching the TV, and all of a sudden there's this virus in China, like, right? And it was just kind of there. And I remember, I'll be honest, my vibe was like, oh, it's over there. Like, yeah. Right? Like, oh, okay. Well, I hope they take care of it next on my feed. Yeah. And it just kind of grew and grew and grew. And our world was put in a snow globe or a blender or whatever the heck you want to call it or say it. And I think a lot of people were saying, like, I just want to go back to normal. And what is normal? And was normal... Was really that old normal really cool? Was it really amazing? And what crisis brings is, I believe, after going through the last couple of years, and I love your feedback, is crisis does bring fear, and it does cramp your style, and it does bring sadness and death and... I mean, insert any kind of word you want to put into over the last couple of years with it, but it also has crisis and opportunity.
That's the word I was going to say.
Yes, I felt it. I was coming in there. It is opportunity. So let's talk about, so we talked about the darkness, we talk about the sadness, we talk about the fear, but let's talk about, now this is when I start channeling, is the scorched earth and the growth of beautiful, like, seedlings growing into earth that was scorched. Let's talk about the need for crisis to create opportunities for reinvention. And I just rambled for like 4 minutes, so I apologize. Mm-hmm. But I think I teed you up into this beautiful moment of honoring crisis, honoring fear, honoring all of the ickiness and the shaking it off. And then now what? So talk to us about the now what.
Yes. Well, I mean, we were talking in the earlier segment about conditioning, and I think we are also very conditioned to avoid crisis, to ignore it when it comes to, yes, Kelly, it's over there, even as it crept closer and closer.
Here's a Band-Aid.
Absolutely. And we are also conditioned to feel shame. If we're in crisis, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so people don't want to hear us talk about it. We don't We don't feel safe talking about it. We don't have safe places to talk about it. In some traditions, they would call a crisis a dark night of the soul. That's probably a term you're both familiar with. Yeah. And I always think that I've had three. And I feel like each one was such a gift in that it – there's the word normal and then there's the word normalization, right? Mm. You're living your life and it's normal. But you've also been normalized. In other words, you've been conditioned to accept your life as normal. And in your head, that's like, this is the way it's supposed to be. What a crisis does, what a dark night of the soul does, is it cracks that open and it asks you questions about what is normal and is this okay? And what do I believe? And what are my assumptions? And what am I standing on? And then how is that reflected back to me in my daily life? There is an opportunity in crisis to question and re-examine and confront our beliefs and ideas about the world that you will never have as you're, what did you say, Kelly, just, you know, living your life, doing your vibe, doing your thing, whatever. As long as you're just doing your thing, very seldom are you going to just take a lot, you know, a good chunk of time out and really examine these things, because guess what? They're working for you.
Yeah, you're finding your flow. Like, and, mm-hmm. you got your groove on and you have your this and this and this. And I think what a crisis does, or what a sickness does, or whatever, insert X, that makes you go like and stop mm-hmm. and pause. And then you kind of look around and you're like, oh, well, that really didn't feel right. Oh, I've been eating that cereal every morning for the last X amount of days. And then you actually have time when you're like looking at it going, oh, that's not good for me. But just like little things like that, where you're able to take that moment and kind of like dial around and get like a 360 of like, is this really a good normal?
I mean, just this morning I was reading Gabor Mate's new book, The Myth of Normal. And oh, it's phenomenal. But he was talking about how, you know, we think that something is true because it's always been true. And the moment that cracks open, there's this huge opportunity to unfreeze things inside you. You know, some of the things that we're really good at, we're good at them because that's been our adaptation method to work. So we're really good at working through trauma or working through crisis or working while we're busy. Well, that's because that's what we had to do when we were young. You know, we've got these traumas that are in us. And so suddenly we're having to change the way we live our lives. We adjust, we adapt. A crisis comes along and all of a sudden now we get to look at all of that. We get to unfreeze parts of ourselves that have been frozen. We get to reclaim parts of ourselves that have been denied. We get to unearth part of ourselves that have been shamed. And we get to come into more wholeness. So that's the opportunity in crisis.
But then to even take it and honor your words a little further is you also get to re-examine what success is.
Yes.
Yes. I pulled that one off.
Oh, that was – well, yes.
Yeah. Talk to us more about that.
I've been asked a few times lately, you know, what is your definition of success? What does it look like for you? And I think most people think it's a ladder. Right? You take this step and then that step leads you to that one. And I just thought today.
And it's tied to a bank account.
Oh, well,
and
yes.
And a pedigree on the wall. Oh. And the car you drive and all these materialistic things.
And it also looks like a straight line for the most part. Right? Yeah. But I actually think success is really chutes and ladders. Right? Yep. Chutes and ladders. Like it is, because if you never fall down, if you're never kicked off your path, then you never have a different view. I mean, when I got kind of kicked out of my yoga world, and I mean, I'm telling you, I identified.
How do you get kicked out of the yoga world? I'm sorry.
That was awesome.
Well, not by me, by my soul. Let's just say my soul took me out and said, this is not where you're going to be anymore. You know, I just felt this need to move on.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about reinvention. I had so identified as a yogi that I couldn't see beyond it. I mean, all I did was wear yoga pants. All I did was wear mala beads. I mean, this was my whole identity top to bottom.
Yeah.
And so then when I wasn't teaching class anymore, it's, well, now, you know, now what? Now who am I without that? And that's the question, you know, the identity, the question of identity. We merge with these things in a way that's, I think, unhealthy. Mm-hmm. So this starts to peel off, right? And it's like, well, underneath that, Kelly, you didn't introduce me as a yogi today.
No,
and
I
it didn't even, I didn't even notice it. But it is a part of me.
Okay, you guys, she's a yogi.
No.
Yeah,
but
right.
How does that feel to you, having that label on you?
Well, so I went through a period where I was like, okay, now I'm nothing. I'm going to be nothing, nothing, nothing at all. And then now I'm in this period of time where I'm reclaiming. And yet not in that clingy way. Not in that this is going to make me. But yes, that is a part of who I am too. Mm-hmm. So I went through both stages and I think I had to.
Yeah.
It was just a way that I had to work. I had to deny it all so that I could call it home when I was ready.
How has your practice changed?
It's completely morphed. There's nothing the same about the way that I practice and see yoga. Now, to me, my yoga is my lifestyle. It is the way that I look through life. It is about the yamas and the niyamas more than it is the asanas. And the yamas and niyamas are just codes of ethics about staying true and staying honest and living a good life and kindness and these kinds of things. So that's more my yoga practice than, you know, my downward dog,
right.
To be quite frank. Yeah.
That's just beautiful.
It's a metamorphosis. And it's not to say that the downward dog won't come back. There was a period of years where my yoga mat was rolled up in the corner of my room and never came out.
Yeah.
Because I was mad at it. I was mad at it. I was mad at where that journey had taken me. I wrote about this story in Embodying Soul.
Yes, you did.
And so I denied it all. And then the healing was about, no, that also.
So that's a book, Body and Soul? Or what?
Embodying Soul was my first book. And it does kind of take you through these three dark nights of the soul that I was talking about. And one of them was this loss of a yoga center that I had. And it broke me for a long time. It took a very long time to heal because I invested everything I was into that space. And so when it was gone, it was such a huge crisis. It was such a huge breakdown, meltdown of my identity, my beliefs in myself, in the world, in other people. I became very bitter. I was that woman on the street with a scowl on my face for quite a while.
Yeah.
And that's just where I had to find myself again. I had to find Carrie again.
Yeah.
And then, you know what I remembered? I remembered how much I love books. And I started picking up books again and not just nonfiction yoga books. And pretty soon I was like, you know what I remember? I remember when I was a kid, I used to dream about having my name on the back of a book. And then the next thing I was doing was writing. And so if it weren't for the loss of my yoga center, I would never have become an author. The paths were not... One path didn't open to the other. I had to get kicked off.
You did have to get kicked off.
Yep.
Well, because you had your jam. You had your flow.
That's exactly right.
And then you had to have this crisis happen so you could get stuck in the snow globe.
Yep.
In the blender.
Shake everything up.
Shake it all up. But then you get to go, what I see is you're able to, ooh, I like that piece. I'm going to grab it. Ooh.
Yep.
And then I'm going to smack that, right?
Yeah.
And
it rings.
It's like, woo, 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 woo. And I'm going to grab this. And then you put it back together. But it's, I'm seeing like Frankenstein, like, but I'm seeing it in this beautiful way.
Mm-hmm.
And isn't it when you break something apart and then you put it back together, it's actually stronger?
Well, and actually, it's even bigger than that. It's alchemy. And we've talked a little bit about alchemy before. But what I did over quarantine was study alchemy. Mm-hmm. And here's what you learn about alchemy. When you really let yourself break down and when you really let all the beliefs and everything, and that's the space that I was at, you turn into prima materia, which is your original nature, your original everything else. Superfluous is gone. This is how alchemists make gold out of lead. You can't make gold out of lead by pounding on the lead. You're only going to hurt yourself and get frustrated. You've got to melt that lead down in fire. And what is fire? Inquiry, examination, exploration, study, breaking things down to their smallest. And then, so not only did I pick things back up, but I was reborn. I was rebirthed. I mean, and I remember when it happened. I remember the feeling of being the phoenix from the ashes.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going back out into the world and saying hi again to people and being genuinely excited about being able to interact with people without thinking that I had to be a yogi in order to interact with them. Does that make sense?
It really does. And so I think I can tie this to food. I like this phrase, commoditization of myself. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, if I'm a radio show, that's part of a commoditization. That's not a living. That's not what Laura is. And same, like, the whole system's built on, you know, corn and soy or these commodities, but it's a living food system. So the food we feed and how we have living systems.
I love that metaphor. It's really perfect. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you guys, we got Carrie. We got Laura. So Carrie's first book is Embodying Soul. You can buy it now.
You can.
Very, very, very easy.
Pretty much everywhere and on my website.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's. I read it. I loved it. Actually, we highlighted it in the Edge magazine. So there we go. We are going to come back and we're going to talk about the opportunity to author your next book and what that looks like. Being Curious with Kelly and Brian, AM 950. We'll be back. Hello, beautiful ones. We're back. Being curious, always. I actually have a Being Curious shirt on today. I think it's Live Curiously. I'm just loving my curious shirts. We're just being curious with Carrie, being curious with Laura. So we're talking about what success looks like. We've talked about what crisis does to help birth reinvention success. Like, oh my gosh. And you really do have to kind of have moments in life where you just kind of blow. I almost swore, you guys, I almost did it, but I didn't. Blow stuff up. And sometimes the rug is pulled from underneath you unexpectedly. Sometimes we get signs that it's leading and we're not listening and universe is like, hello. Hello, you need this, right? That's what I'm feeling right now. So, Carrie is an author, and how do you describe yourself as a yogi now? Like, do you introduce yourself in that, or is that not even like you just have a practice, or like how do you? Okay, so where I want to go with the last segment, we talked about that rebirth. Mm-hmm. So when you in your new practice, how do you introduce yourself in with that?
It's one of the hardest things.
Okay. That's why I was having like roadblocks even asking you about it.
It is one of the hardest things as I have gone through so many, I call them skins, as I've gone through so many and I put them on and I take them off and I put them on and I take them off. They feel like costumes to me, mm-hmm. you know, like I'm in a play. And so when I am asked to, describe myself in a word, describe myself in a few words, I actually find that really difficult. I like being label-less.
Yeah.
You know, I really do. But then, you know, people really do want a label now and then. And I like my daughters when I was young called me a deep thought translator. And I'm like, ooh, I like deep thought translator.
Laura's grabbing that.
Yeah. And, you know, people are like, what does that mean? And I, you know, my daughters are just like, well, she's just always one who wants to, like, dig into things, you know. And I don't know. There were a couple other things that, like, my audience has called me before. And they're on my website. And those are my favorites.
CarrieMangus.com.
Yeah. And those are my favorites. They're not your typical, but they're kind of fun. And I was like, okay. When someone called me a hooligan, I'm like, yep, I like it. Call me a hooligan. That's a lot of fun.
I consider you like a partner in crime.
Yeah.
Like I like if I was going to like had to go to war and I'm not like trying to like, no, I know the time. But like you'd be one of those people that I'd be like if I had 5 minutes to gather a little team around me to go do something crazy.
Yeah.
You'd be on there.
Like, yep. Get creative. We can do it. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So you're an author. Mm-hmm. And something that I'm curious about as I interview a ton of authors now, and The Edge is just really trying to be a platform for authors to come in and not a lot of authors like are like you that can just like get up and start talking about themselves. Sometimes you really got to pull. And then others that are just like you just give them a mic and they won't stop.
Yeah.
Writing book one, getting it done, and you self-published, correct?
I did.
Okay. What was your learning? Like now you're in the throes of book two.
Yeah.
How do you do this? What is your cadence? How do you get inspired? I mean, I know that if I forced myself from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock to sit down at my computer and just think and put words to the paper, I would be distracted. I'd go vacuum. I would go grocery shopping. I would go on to like wherever. Like I would get so distracted if I made myself do something. Mm-hmm. But you've got to have discipline. You've got to have timelines and deadlines. You've got to be inspired. You've got to take your outline. Like, what is the new process and what did you learn from book one to book two?
So with book one, it was an obsession. It was an absolute addiction. I could not stop writing. I took my computer with me everywhere. You did not see me without a computer in tow. It was crazy madness. And I wrote so much, like just pages and pages and pages. And I had no idea. I mean, at first it was just going to be a nonfiction self-help book. As you know, it eventually turned into more memoir. But that took a lot of time. And so that process was more about learning how to write again, remembering where the period goes. Because I'd forgotten some of that stuff. It had been a long time. I'd been doing Downward Dogs. I hadn't been doing paragraphs and things like that. I started in 2014 and I published in 2020. What happened to me in the writing of that book, and this happens to a lot of people when they write memoir, is you transform in the writing of it because you're unearthing things, and it's very much this process that we're talking about here. And so the person who was finished writing the book was a different person who started it. The person who finished the book understood that she had a responsibility to this earth and to other people and became more activist in her approach to the world. And so that has sort of been more where I've been since that book. And so the second book is more about the connection between our personal growth and our personal transformation and the world's growth and transformation. And I see them as mirroring each other.
Yeah.
And so does the UN, by the way. I mean, there's a conscious foods network and inner goals. And so it operates on some really complex levels, but it also can be simplified too. It's like the being, our state of being. And one of the things I shared in the show I did is that humans are doing these incredible feats, fusion energy, whatever, but how do we live with each other and how do we live with ourselves? Mm-hmm. And how do we have a living planet and the connection between the living planet and us as individuals,
yes,
the sentient beings and how we move forward to that. So you talk about these growths that, you know, how to be optimistic for the future and let something else grow.
Yeah.
But at the same time, being aware of we're a mass extinction event and all of the challenges that are happening. A quarter of the world's population is suffering with war. There's so much food insecurity. I mean, so I don't know how to put all that. But
well,
that's just,
yeah, we have to work on ourselves. I mean, our relationship with ourselves is not in a great state, right? I mean, a lot of us don't even like ourselves. A lot of us talk to ourselves in a way we'd never talk to anybody else. We put all the blame on ourselves. And again, this is what we were talking about in the first segment about we don't look up. We just look inward and we say, why can't I function in this system? Why can't I, you know, make a living while I'm working three jobs? Well, maybe the system is the problem. And so it's not, so sometimes my gripe with the spiritual community sometimes is that they only take responsibility on the individual, right? I mean, you can change your life kind of idea is beautiful,
but
there's a pretty big but here, right? We're living in a world that these systems are not designed to support us.
Right.
And we need to make that world manifest in today's world, which is connected to healthy soil and connected to healthy relationships. And you're right about how much we tear down ourselves. That's crazy. I mean, suicide rates are up, anxiety and depression's up. And
opioid,
and just being kind to ourselves. Yeah. And that's one of the kindest things we can do to Earth is to be kind to ourselves.
Well, and everything's a reflection. You know, there's a phrase in alchemy, as above, so below, microcosm of the macrocosm. I mean, all of these things are tied together. And so we can't just work on ourselves and expect to see, you know, miraculous results. We've got to work hand in hand with activist movements and with the global communities. And we do need to reach out and connect with each other and support each other and be able to help each other through our crises. Mm-hmm. Because there are so many people I had helping me during my crises that if it weren't for them, I think I could have been lost. You know, I just could have been lost at some point. I wouldn't be sitting here. It wasn't a self. It wasn't an individual journey. And so with this next book, what I'm trying to do is connect these pieces, that as we go through the stages of letting ourselves break down and examine the beliefs and the assumptions that underlie our actions and our behaviors, that we will also be doing that at a collective level. Because there are a lot of collective and societal myths. And you know what those myths do? They hold the status quo in place.
Yeah.
As long as we continue to subscribe to the myths, the status quo lives on.
So what's the main myth?
Well, there's several. I mean, there's the myth in limited amounts of things. I mean, I think that that's something that we tell ourselves. There's only so much scarcity, the belief in scarcity.
Or that just because someone has something, you can't have it as well.
Oh, the whole, what is that called?
I don't know the word.
Zero sum.
There we go.
Yeah, we're talking about for me to be happier, you're going to have to be unhappier. For me to live a better life, you're going to have to live. Right. That's definitely a myth that keeps the status quo held in place.
One of my favorite little phrases is sympathetic joy, because we hear a lot about you got to be sympathetic when someone's sad. But what about sympathetic when they're joyful, especially if, like, you know, I've been struggling to have a kid and you have a pregnancy. How do I be joyful about your pregnancy? Or you got a job. How do I be joyful about that? But being joyful on that, I mean,
when I was pregnant with my daughter, I unexpectedly my daughter and I actually had to have the talk about unexpected pregnancies, like wanted and unwanted and all that. I mean, like, yeah, there we go. Another show. But like, I was unexpectedly pregnant with my daughter. Blessing. Like, so excited. I had three friends going through adoption and in vitro and struggling to get pregnant. And I show up and I'm like, well, we never pulled the goalie. I don't understand. I'm pregnant. And then take it to the level is I'm sick. I'm so sick during my pregnancy. I'm a great oven, but I was really sick. So I'm just in my pity party talking about how it was like having the flu for 9 months. I mean, that's how it was. And I had two friends that were just like, I don't have, no, you are so blessed. You're this. I had to be quiet. I got to the point where I was quiet because I had something that they want. It was this weird, funky dynamics, but it goes back to, I wasn't able to fully honor what they were going through, and they weren't honoring what I was going through. And rather than just like high-fiving each other and going, wow, isn't this funky? Like, right?
Right.
And just doing that with each other, we didn't. And there was weird emotions around it. Sorry about my little tangent.
No, it's perfect. Oh, absolutely perfect example.
Well, it is. And then if anyone's read Atlas of the Heart, have either of you read it from Brené Brown, there is a word in there that describes what you're talking about. And I'm trying to come up with it, but it's kind of a long, fancy word. And I remember it's the opposite of Schadenfreude, which is when you take joy in other people's misery. There's an opposite to that.
Oh.
And she talks about it in the Atlas of the Heart. And so maybe we can put that in the comments, Kelly, on this.
That'd be great.
People can look that up because
I picked up this phrase, psychological informant, which is in literature like Shakespeare, there's Othello and someone's life is going great and then all their best friends are like conspiring to hurt them. I mean, that's Count of Monte Cristo. But I mean, so how we have that society where we can learn to be joyful in each other and make that shift would really cause a lot of changes both on the inner and the outer worlds.
And can you imagine, talk about normalization, can you imagine normalizing people moving through natural life stages? So we're calling it crisis today mostly because it's a word we need to use in order to like get people to know what we're talking about. But we can also just move through natural life cycles. Not everything needs to become a crisis. Right. Had I saw what was happening to me earlier, right? Had I been able to not just keep shouldering on because that's what I was taught to do, then I could have started releasing things earlier. I could have started to question my association with this yogi title earlier and in a softer way. Maybe it wouldn't have been a crisis. Maybe it just would have been part of a life cycle. And this is something I think that this is what my book's going to be about, are the life cycles of and how we fall apart and how that falling apart lets us reexamine and then how that reexamination allows us to be reborn. Because the solutions that we need for a better world will not be found in this world. And they won't be found in what's already been done. We have to go into deep into our imagination. We have to go deep into our collective unconscious. We have to go to places that we can't go to when we're just busy getting things done.
We could go on for hours, you guys. I just want to thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
So book number two, TBD, when are we going to feel in it?
Goal is 2014. We'll see how it goes.
2014?
Okay. Yep.
Or 2024?
What am I saying?
You said 14.
14,
okay. Which I'm not 10 years ago.
I really want the world.
Wait, okay. I'm going to do this retroactively. I'm going in the past.
Okay, yeah. We're doing it. So we're gonna just pop in the portals. It's going to be fantastic,
yes.
You guys.
2024.
More to come with Carrie. Just a gift to our community. CarrieMangus.com. Just check it out. Laura Hedlund, Food Freedom Radio, here on AM 950. I'm Kelly, being curious. See you later.
Thank you.
Thank you.